listening to
Black Knight.
We're back there with Neil Slade, who's going to he's giving us a story about the higher brain approach to dealing with a mountain lion.
Right. Okay. And this is a very powerful analogy to what's happening in our country right now. And that's basically why I'm telling this story. And it also clarifies the difference between reptilian brain solutions and frontal lobe solutions. Okay, so anyways, now we've got two people. One guy educated himself. He anticipated a problem. He came up with strategies and solutions, in advance. He was using abstract imagery to see what the possibilities were. And so he goes on the trip. Well, the guy who didn't stop at the ranger station, within 15 minutes, he got lost on the mountain because he didn't bother to look at a map. He didn't bother to use the wisdom and the knowledge of people who knew the mountain well before him. So he gets lost on the mountain, and sure enough, about an hour later, he's wandering around lost in the woods. Here comes a mountain lion. And the mountain lion sees him and goes, rah, right? And the first thing, the guy automatically clicks into reptilian brain fight or flight, right? I mean, you would if you saw a mountain lion, right? And so he turns tail and he just runs as fast as he can because that's his reaction, okay? Well, the cougar, the mountain lion, runs after him because he sees this thing running away. He figures it's prey. And before you know it, this guy is the cougar's lunch that day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That was the reptilian solution, fight or flight. If he was lucky, maybe he would have got away, but on this instance, he didn't get away.
If he happened to have, like, some kind of weapon with him or what have you, all right, he may have got out of it, but...
Cougars are pretty strong, but in this case, he just fight or flight, he just reacted, he ran, that was the end of it. And, that was one solution. That was one reptilian solution that didn't work. The other fellow, he's walking down the trail looking for his friend, and a little while later, here comes that same cougar, right? And he sees the guy and goes, rah! Well, this fellow, suddenly, he goes in a fight or flight, but then his cortex becomes activated. And he remembers that, oh, yeah, I saw that brochure. And all this thinking is happening in just a fraction of a second, but it's still the cortex clicks into action. His amygdala clicks forward, and he remembers that if you see a cougar, you raise your arms, and so that's what he does, and he grabbed his jacket, and he made himself look really big, and he started making a lot of noise, and he didn't run. And the cougar saw this and went, oh, no. This creature's bigger than me. That ain't no deer. And the cougar turns around and splits, and the guy survives. Okay?
Mm.
So that's an analogy. That's an analogy how, sometimes your reptile brain, yeah, will make you survive, but sometimes, you get in a fight with somebody, you go home twice as bloody as the guy that you got in a fight with. Right?
Right.
The frontal lobes, on the other, is able to add intelligence, it can add experience, it can add information that we get from other people. It's the difference, listen, your reptile brain takes up like 1/6 of the volume of your brain. Your frontal lobes takes up 30% of the volume of your brain. You've got hundreds of times more neural circuitry available to you if you click forward and use these advanced processes of your brain. It's smarter to use more of your brain than less of your brain.
Well,
so your survival is enhanced.
So when is the current leadership around the world going to realize that someday they're going to not have a big enough gun and start using parts of the other brain?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I've really been getting into, the current, what's very interesting this day is this whole 9/11 controversy and what 9/11 stood for. And I have found this to be just the most interesting. I feel like Sherlock Holmes whenever I get on the web and I type in 9/11, because every day people are coming up with new information that sheds light on what that whole thing was all about. And as I look at that more and more, what I'm seeing is the official explanation and the way that the government and the way that big business dealt with the problem is purely reptilian. It's all fight or flight. It's counterattack. It's greed. It's all the types of things that are expressed by reptilian brain processes. And people, you know, people who are not in the mainstream, who are looking at this and finding just amazing details about the cause of 9/11 and about the supposed solutions, these people are really using their brains, and they're finding out just amazing kinds of things about it. And they're looking for, and they're discovering frontal lobe solutions to the so-called war on terror that are long-term solutions rather than these totally ineffectual reptilian solutions that all we have to do is open up the paper and we can see that the reptile brain solutions to the war on terror are, they feed it. They make it worse. That's the difference between reptile brain that doesn't think and just reacts and frontal lobes that thinks about cause and effect. You know, who is really doing the terror? What is the, you know, what is the historical ramifications of reacting using violence as opposed to reacting using cooperative intelligence? So 9/11 is a wonderful, I've learned more about human behavior and functions of the brain by just simply examining this, the available information on 9/11 that I've learned in 2 years, you know, just studying, you know, here and there. 9/11 is a wonderful tool that people can use to learn about human brain processes and, you know, what is effective and what is not effective.
One process, we got a couple minutes before we take a break at the top, but one of the things I've been amazed by is when someone, like I, you know, being this talk show, I have people on, and I looked at the evidence and realized there's no question about it that there was, I mean, what they said didn't happen.
And it's a no-brainer. Really.
But when you talk to somebody about it and you present the very simple physical type thing, they're just like, talk about fight or flight. They're like flight all over the place. I mean, they want out of that. They don't even want to think about it.
Absolutely. And in fact, two days ago, I wrote a paper called The Psychology of 9/11 Perception. And if people want to go to, actually, they can get to it by going to 911think.com, and they can read my paper, and we can talk more about that after your break.
Okay, yeah, well, definitely. I'll add that to my little list of things. But all right, hold on. We'll be back about a four-minute break. We're talking with Neil Slade, and we're talking about brain and stuff. Brain stuff. That's what it is. It's pretty cool. Neil's got a lot of good information, and he's just an all-around good guy. It's nice to get connected with him and get this information. We'll continue up to the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Pete to the Fire Live. We're talking with Neil Slade, and welcome back, Neil. You know, when I was putting these bumpers together, I was inspired to pick this one because when I talk with you, when we talk about things, I just, you're like a shiny, happy people. I don't know exactly what they meant in the song, if they were being satirical or not, but you're one of these guys you can talk to and you learn about stuff, and it's just a positive experience, and I appreciate you being here.
Hello, yes. Well, I like to be a positive person. I heard myself laugh there.
Oh,
I thought that was very bizarre. Oh. I heard myself laugh. Oh, well, I would just perceive an alternative parallel dimension there. That was really bizarre. I didn't say anything because I thought I was listening to a previous broadcast.
Oh, no. I don't know. Maybe we're time warping or something. We're slipping in and out.
That was really bizarre. Okay, well, we just had a little paranormal thing happen right on the air. No, I swear to God, I just heard myself laugh on the phone. As you were talking, and I thought, oh, that must be he's playing from a previous show.
Oh.
And then I realized you weren't.
Well, the normals usually do come in pairs, so we'll find out what the...
Yeah, it's really strange. Well, you know, What I was thinking about over the break had to do with conventional wisdom and reality and what we perceive to be as truth, and how this is, we as a culture and society, we are often controlled by what we perceive to be as truth, which in fact is not truth. A good example, people take things for granted that are, on the face of things look like they're true, but they're not true. An example would be if I were to tell you, if you were to grab an egg out of the refrigerator and squeeze it as hard as you could with your hand, what do you think the result would be?
Well, it would break unless it's frozen or something.
Yeah, you'd have egg all over the place, right? That makes sense, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not true at all. And I would suggest everyone in your audience go try this. Go grab an egg, make sure you've got it in the center of your palm, and squeeze it with your fingers wrapped around it. You cannot break that egg. And the reason is, it's very simple. It's because you're exerting pressure on all sides of the egg. And so it won't break.
I'm putting it in my mind. I'm seeing it. Yeah, you got to try it. It would be all.
You think, oh, of course, a fragile egg, you squeeze it, it'll break. If you squeeze it unevenly, sure it will. But if you wrap your hand around it and squeeze it all from all directions, no, the harder you squeeze, the stronger you make that eggshell. Now, it's kind of an illusion that we have about reality. That's an example of in that case. Now, if you take something like 9/11, a terrible tragedy, people will assume that, well, if a plane crashes into a building and there's this big fireball in the building and you see all the smoke pour out of the building and then the building collapses, well, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Right?
Mm-hmm.
This follows. But if you're one of these people like you and I are, that have actually researched the facts, you will discover that not a single building in history, no steel building ever, since the beginning of time that we know of, has collapsed due to fire. No building has ever collapsed due to a plane hitting it. There have been much worse fires that have lasted considerably longer than the fires in the Trade Center that engulfed many, many, many floors. Very intense fires that went on for full day, and the building stood. The only time in history buildings have ever fallen due to fire were on that day. And in fact, one of the buildings, which many people haven't even heard of, building number 7, it never even got hit by a plane. There was a little damage from some debris on the corner building. This is a 47-story building. You can look at the photographs. There's a couple little fires on two of the floors. 5 p.m., that whole building came down, and it looked exactly like controlled demolition. Now, I'm not going to get into, all the facts and stuff. I'll leave that to people to go, hey, man, go do your – be a detective. This is such an interesting – you can feel like you're Sherlock Holmes and dig up all the information. You don't have to take anybody's word for it. Just look at the facts that are incontrovertible and that you can find on the web and in books and things like that. And it's kind of, again, like, what on the surface we expect to be reality, in fact, isn't reality at all. It's just like the egg, okay? It's just like the egg. And there are people who are out there that want to control information, want to control people because it's either very profitable for them to do that, or they can hold on to power. Oh, wait a minute, those are reptilian brain attributes again. Greed, self-motivation, egocentric, right? Okay. There are reptilian types of people out there who will use these on the surface, what we think are obvious facts that are really not facts at all. So we can fool ourselves very easily into thinking something is real when it's not real. And there's a lot of, you can study the psychology of that and understand why people are so resistant to looking at the true nature of things and why people hold on to preconceived notions of the way things are.
Now, and when I mentioned to people, the two things that I talk with these individuals about, and it's the only time I actually went out into the general public at this place I was at and started talking about it,
yeah,
was I stuck to the physics of the fuel not being able to melt steel.
Yes.
And I stuck to the third building falling, and 100% of the people there didn't even know it was the third building.
Oh, right. Well, it's because that information was suppressed. You know, the same people who would profit from the world, from the war on terrorism, are incidentally the same people who are connected to ownership of media in this country. You know, if you look at the major corporations, you know, it's not like everybody's independent. If you keep going deeper and deeper, you'll see that the same interests are running many of the major, you know, all of our major media is what, owned by, I think it's like five corporations.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, if you look at the ownership of all the newspapers and all the thousands of cities in America, it goes back to only something like five companies.
One thing that was good, though, is for this one individual's credit who was at the front of the group talking to me, is that because I kept pulling them back, well, who did it, and how did they do it, and why did they do it? I pulled them back, just look at the evidence, and I used metaphors like if your car got broken into, you wouldn't, you know, want to just race off down the street and think it's a guy, you know, you follow it, and, you know.
Yeah.
And after that discussion, he said, I'd like to see these DVDs.
Yeah. Know?
And so, like, luckily, these people who have been on the show, they've given me permission to duplicate them, and I gave them a mitful, but I've never heard from them again.
Well, yeah, I got to tell you my experience of how I got into 9/11 and why I was interested in it. I have coffee with a group of friends every morning at our local coffee shop, and we have, you know, it's just a friendly little chat that we have every morning to wake up to. And so one day, you know, there, and I, this was long after I'd seen the Nova special on PBS, okay? Now, Nova is kind of an, we look to it as sort of an authority. We, PBS, we think of as a honest presentation of facts and so on and so forth. Mostly because it's big, you know. We see a lot of good information on PBS, and I've seen a lot of good information on Nova, for example. So I sort of see Nova as an authority that I can trust. So I'd seen the why did the buildings fall special on Nova. So that was my perception of the reality of this particular event. So anyway, so I go to my coffee shop, and the guy says, hey, you know, you should look at this DVD I got. It's about how the Trade Center fell. And so my very first reaction was, oh, you know, I'm thinking, oh, this guy's in the conspiracy theories. You know, I know people that are in the conspiracy theories, you know. And I said, no, I've seen the Nova thing. That's okay. And he says, no, you got to look at this. It's different. It's not what you think it was, okay? So at that point, my reptile brain says, my reptile brain was saying, oh, this guy's crazy. Don't waste your time, right? Don't cooperate. Don't share. You understand the reptilian mm-hmm. brain saying with that attitude? But then my frontal lobes were saying, well, listen, you know, this guy, maybe this guy has seen something you haven't seen. Maybe you can look at it and then share some comments and feedback with him. And, you know, don't reject him without, you know, at least being open-minded, okay? That's a frontal lobes. That's using the frontal lobes of gathering more data and more information as opposed to, you know, putting up the defensive system. Okay, so I said, okay, I'll take it home. So I took the DVD home, and it was this presentation by Dr. Stephen Jones, who, as it turns out, was a lifelong Republican who teaches physics at one of the most conservative universities in the country, BYU. And I put on the DVD, and it's the ethical and physical questions surrounding 9/11. And I watched it for 2 hours straight. My jaw was on the floor by the time I was finished with this and it completely changed so many levels of my perception about how the media works, about how the government works, how people come to it was a life-changing experience. Just because I was open to the idea that, well, maybe somebody else has a different way of looking at things. So I looked at that DVD, and since then I've just been like Sherlock Holmes. I wanted to find out more. I've been a 9/11 detective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the more I study it, the more revelations I come upon, and the more solid my change in perspective of that whole, you know, the war on terrorism and that whole event and everything is. Anyway, so that's the opposite of the reaction that you were talking about, where people say, no, I don't want to hear about it. No, really, that's too much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then I began to ask myself, why do people, what is happening in the brain when people have that kind of reaction to the 9/11 truth movement, we'll call it? When people say the word 9/11, what happens? Why is it that some people are interested in hearing another perspective, but yet a large number of people just say, go away? What's happening there? I mean, have you given this some thought yourself?
No.
What have you come up with?
Well, I actually, what I've come up with is likened to that scene in The Matrix, which people who didn't hear the local commercials, they hear that cut where it's one of those things that if you actually give it attention,
yeah,
it's going to be that you can't go back.
Yeah.
You're going into this area that your whole paradigm perception, and perhaps there's a sensitivity to that, like this is a real life-changing event, and yet you kind of sense it, like feeling it before it happens and go, uh-uh, I like where I'm at. I don't want to go there. I like my illusion.
I'm comfortable where I am.
And I don't want to change, and it's one of these things that if you actually follow, like you said, you saw these several DVDs, and there's nice ones.
Just connect the dots. Oh, it's very simple. You just connect this dot.
You can't go back to where you used to live. It's the life is completely changed.
It's like Alice through the looking glass, but instead of going into the illusion, you're really coming out of the illusion. Yes, you're absolutely right. What I was asking myself though was, what's at work in people's minds who either reject, but it's just, I mean, the laws of nature. You know, for example, if you tell someone, listen, a 110-story building cannot collapse in 10 seconds, which is how long the two tall buildings collapsed, and the number 7 collapsed in 6 seconds. This is free fall speed. In other words, and this is what I tell people if I'm trying to get them interested in, you know, investigating for themselves. If you were to drop a grand piano off a 110-story building, it would take roughly, give or take a half a second, 10 seconds before it hits the pavement. Okay? That is the speed that World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7 fell, at free fall speed, the same as if you dropped a piano off the roof of the building. Okay? Now, when you drop a piano, that's a piano flying through air with no hitting nothing, no resistance except air. That's how long it would take. That's free fall speed. All three buildings fell at free fall speed. How does a building collapse at free fall speed when you've got 110 steel and concrete floors in the way, when in the middle of the building you have these enormous box columns that have held up this building for 30 years that are so strong, how does that all come down in 10 seconds? There's only one way that anyone knows of, and that's you blow up the building, that you blow up the supports, you blow up the inside of the building. That's what's called controlled demolition. You remove the supporting structures, all of the things that are in the way, so that the building implodes upon itself. There's no other way for a building to collapse at free fall speed except by controlled demolition, by placing explosive charges in the building. So that's a pretty straightforward fact that reflects the laws of physics, the laws of nature that we know it. You can tell it to somebody, and some people will accept that, but yet some people will say, no, no, that's not true. That's impossible. And it's like, wait a minute, this is the laws of nature that Newton gave us and that Galileo gave. How can, you're saying that Newton and Galileo are wrong? He says, I don't care. It's just, it's impossible. Nobody could have blown up those buildings, you know? And so I'll say something like, okay, well, how about the cell phone calls? We're all very familiar with the cell phone calls that were supposedly made on the jets, except there's one problem. You can't make cell phone calls on airplanes at high altitude. Once a plane gets above 8,000 feet, which is planes reach this altitude above 8,000 feet minutes after taking off, within minutes, and they don't get to that altitude until they're ready to land, right? And if you look at the history of the cell phone calls on 9/11, they were, many of them, many of the significant calls were to have been made while these planes were way above 8,000 feet. If that's impossible, and if telecommunications people, who are the ultimate authorities on cell phone use on planes, and example, American Airlines just said, like, very recently, oh, we have now made it possible to make cell phone calls for the first time on airplanes this year. How were those cell phone calls made?
They should have said easier.
What?
They should have said easier, but they weren't thinking about it. You know, Mark Twain had a saying, you don't have to remember anything if you don't lie. You tell the truth, you don't remember anything.
Well, that's if you're saying the airlines were. It wasn't the airliners who told us that the cell phone calls were made.
Right.
These came from other sources. So, the airlines who made this recent statement were just, okay, but you tell people these facts, and yet they still say, no, it's impossible. It's impossible. I believe that the official story was true, despite physics, despite the invisible, the impossibility of making cell phone calls. Here's another one. This is some more conventional wisdom that almost everybody believes, right? Osama bin Laden was behind 9/11, right? Doesn't everybody believe that? Isn't that the first thing? And we saw the tape of Osama bin Laden confessing that he was responsible.
Yeah, that tape is pretty funny.
Well, the fact is,
I don't know who that guy was, but...
Well, you can go to the FBI Most Wanted List webpage, and you will not find the FBI connecting Osama bin Laden to 9/11. Why? And this was a couple months ago. They said, well, we don't have any evidence. So I'm telling all your listeners, go to the FBI site, look up Osama bin Laden. Do you see Osama bin Laden in 9/11? No. But the entire war on terrorism, the entire invasion of Afghanistan, comes back down to this conventional wisdom that Osama bin Laden did 9/11. So there's a lot of groupthink, there's a lot of manipulation through what we accept as conventional wisdom, and it infiltrates our entire foreign policy and where all of your tax money is going to. And, you know, every person in the United States now owes $30,000 because of our deficit, which much of it is due to the never-ending war against terror and Osama bin Laden.
Hold on there. We're going to take this break. We're going to cut out here quick and come right back and continue with Neil Slade.